Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You know at some point that your baby will develop a routine and start sleeping for longer stints, but when you are up most of the night, believe me, I know, this can seem like a distant hope. Finding what works for you and your baby is key, but this takes time and it often requires support. This is where the Peanut app comes in. It provides a safe space for mothers, expectant mothers, and those trying to conceive to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. From advice on sleep routines to breastfeeding, Peanut is the place to connect with women who understand what you are going through. You can download the Peanut app for free today on your app store or head to peanut.app.link/foodforthought. Hello and welcome to Food for Thought on Motherhood, a special mini-series on all things pregnancy, childbirth, and baby. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In this special mini-series, I'm joined by leading health professionals so that together we can all learn fact from fiction and support your journey, whether that's through conception, pregnancy, or just like me, as a brand new mum. Having a good night's sleep may seem impossible as a parent, believe me, I know, but there are things you can do to make it a little bit easier. This Food for Thought on Motherhood sees sleep consultant Rosie Davidson and I delve into the secrets of how much sleep your baby really needs and how to develop the best bedtime routines. Hello, Rosie.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you for coming on. I think you're about to help a lot of parents out there, Rosie. I am one of them that called out for you pretty much as soon as I knew that I could do something with Zachary for his sleep, because I think sleep when the baby sleeps sounds blissful enough in theory, doesn't it? But it's not really as simple as that, is it?
Well, it's not the most practical advice, because having a baby, although it's all encompassing, there are other things that we need to do in our lives. So feeding ourselves, looking after our homes, potentially working, potentially our partner's working. So it's not always practical to sleep when baby sleeps.
No, and it's actually really hard to do as well. I think napping is an art in itself. I don't know what you think, but actually trying to get to sleep in the middle of the day, it's quite hard sometimes.
It really is. I think napping in the day is great if you're someone who can do it. But interestingly, we should only really nap for about 15 minutes. Otherwise, you can get something called sleep inertia when you wake up. So that's that kind of groggy feeling. So research tells us that around 15 minutes is a really good power nap to rejuvenate us. But much more than that can actually make you feel worse.
That's exactly what's been happening to me then.
Yeah.
I'm always reaching for the biscuit tin the minute I wake up from a nap, and now I know
well,
why.
That's also your blood sugar dropping when you're asleep as well. So that is really, really normal. It's normal for us to want something to eat when we wake up.
Well, there we go. See, this is exactly why we've got you on this podcast.
Yeah.
If we go back for people listening to the lead up to having a baby, what would you say is the best thing that a parent or parents can do to prepare for this?
So I think, as with any anything to do with parenting, we think we need all of these gadgets, we need to do buy loads of stuff. And that really isn't what I'm about. I think it's about keeping it really, really simple. So babies just need somewhere safe to sleep, a firm surface to sleep on. They need some baby clothes to wear. They need some milk, whether that's breast or formula. And they need nappies and they need cuddles. And that's really all they need.
Yeah.
So I think we can get really obsessed with buying loads of stuff and loads of gadgets. But I think preparing yourself mentally is probably more valuable than it is kind of with things, if that makes sense.
No, it really does. I was going to say that's so interesting because I was definitely, I think, in a stage of panic when I was preparing, thinking, I don't know how many baby grows I need, or do I need to buy all these different sorts of, I don't know, things that you put on the cot? Just everything, Rosie. It was so overwhelming. But one thing that I did do, which I think really did help, is meal prep. Obviously, as a nutritionist, that's the area I can actually do. But frozen meals, and even now, and Zachary's only in his third month of life, even now, having those frozen meals in the freezer is always a lifesaver.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, when you're sleep deprived, and I'm sure we'll touch on this more, but no one can really prepare you for that. Those early days, those first few weeks. But getting some good nutrition into your body is going to really, really help you. And quite naturally, we all reach for fast food and easy things because we don't feel like standing in a kitchen, let alone whether we're actually physically able to do that, depending on our births. So having that pre-prepared is so valuable. And I always say to people, you know, if you're wondering what to take round to a friend with a new baby, if you're dropping off food, fantastic. That's a great thing to do. In some cultures, in Indian cultures and other cultures, the community all bring food to the mother. And I think that's just amazing. Oh.
I feel filled with sadness sometimes when I think about how, I mean, it's amazing the culture we live in the UK. We're very, very lucky. It's very diverse, but I do feel that we've lost the care. And that's probably a whole other podcast topic on postpartum care for mums, because, I mean, maybe I had a different experience, Rosie, but I was obviously, Zachary was born in the peak of the pandemic, the highest cases recorded the week he was born. And we couldn't have anybody see him for about 7 to 8 weeks anyway, which was hard enough. I don't know any different, but it's definitely not that kind of attitude in the UK, is there, where isn't it a village to grow your baby?
Yeah, exactly. And I always say, who mothers the mother, you know? It's about building that support network, but also putting your boundaries in place. So we talk about pulling up the drawbridge, protecting yourself in that bubble. But if I always say to people, if someone wants to come and feed you or clean your home, that's more valuable than it is for somebody who wants to come around and hold your baby. That's not, you don't need someone to hold your baby. You can do that, or your partner can do that. You need someone to come and do the other bits and look after you.
Yeah. No, I completely, completely agree. It's very interesting, actually, because even when we had people to visit after the quarantine was lifted and they could come, it was still very much, I'm hosting, you know, would you like a cup of tea? Would you like a drink? Blah, blah, blah.
It cringes me out, honestly. I mean, I've had lots of friends who've had babies and I wouldn't dream of it. I would pop in with food, and if they wanted me to, I would offer to make them a cup of tea because they're the ones who need it, not the guests who are arriving. So, yeah.
It's an interesting one. So to anybody listening, that's probably the best thing you can do for someone.
Yes, exactly. Food, looking after them, you know, prioritising them, because the baby will be fine. The baby doesn't need the visitors.
No, it's so true. Let's move on to the topic that I've got you on here for, because you are the expert here, which is how well you can get your baby to sleep. And we know that that is based on a multitude of things, isn't it? It's not a simple thing.
Yes. Oh, there's so many things that go into sleep. And obviously, newborns, it's very, very normal for them to wake a lot and to not sleep much. But some of them, I mean, ideally, we're looking for kind of 10 to 18 hours a day across 24 hours for newborns. But it really varies so much. And if you have a baby who maybe has reflux or an undiagnosed dairy allergy or some other kind of health condition going on, very windy baby, there's all these different things that can really cause disturbances with sleep. But there's so many things we can look at. So I can kind of go through the areas. The first thing really is sleep environment. And I always talk about this with everyone. You can't think about this too early. This is fine to look at. So blacking out your room. For every baby, I talk about this, and adults as well. So to help support a good settled night's sleep, we want it to be dark because that helps support our melatonin production, our sleepy hormone. And also for babies, it can help signal that it's time to sleep, especially as they get a bit bigger. So once they get kind of 3 months and up, they can get quite distracted, and it gives them a nice signal that it's wind down time. And also if you're to wake up, if they're to wake up in the early hours of the morning, you know, like at the moment, I think it gets like about 5:30 at the moment, but that, you know, will gradually get later. But still, if there's a bit of light coming in, that's enough to stimulate them and perhaps tell them it's time to start the day.
No, it's, we bought on your suggestion, the blackout blinds.
Yes.
And it does make a difference, especially in this lovely weather that we're getting at the time this is being recorded.
Yeah.
It's very light. It's been very sunny and lovely. And I have noticed, I don't know if it's just me, and Zachary's still very young, but he definitely does know now, I think. He's got to that point where he's like, oh, it's dark. You know, he definitely knows the difference between night and day.
Yes. Some people ask me, you know, oh, should you give them their naps in the dark? Because is that not going to confuse them? And I am, I'm really passionate about it. Doing the naps in the dark so that you're giving them the message it's time to unwind and go to sleep. And like we said, you know, Zachary's kind of age, he's becoming more aware, he's more easily stimulated. And it just gives that message that, oh, I can switch off. And it's giving that message to our bodies subconsciously as well.
Oh, 100%. That's definitely helped with us, I know. And I've also noticed that the temperature of the room, because I think when, is there something to do with babies suddenly at 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. noticing a temperature shift? Does that happen?
It's possible. So some babies, some parents might find that they're waking up somewhere between kind of 3 and 5 a.m. and it can potentially be to do with a temperature dip. So what I would do there is just make sure that they're wearing appropriate bedding. If you have a baby that's older and they might kick off bedding, then I advise a baby sleeping bag, and that helps kind of maintain their temperature really.
When you say baby sleeping bag, so something that I was, and this really confused me so much before, when I was pregnant, every, you know, the little tick lists of things you need to buy, sleeping bags were on there. I was thinking sleeping bags, I didn't have a clue. And I bought, because they looked pretty, these really thick, heavy, gorgeous Peter Rabbit sleeping bags.
Yeah.
But it's way too warm. So he hasn't used them because it's summer. No. I didn't know that you have to look at the TOG temperature, don't you, on the side. So now I've got this nice muslin type one, which is perfect for this weather. But I think that's one of the hardest things, regulating things like room temperature.
Yeah, it is really hard. So the optimal temperature is 16 to 19 degrees, which is kind of on the cooler side. But naturally, our body prefer to sleep when it's cooler. Our bodies find it easier to sleep, but obviously in certain circumstances we can't control the heat. So the weather, you know, in the summer it's very, very warm, so don't panic if you can't actually bring down the temperature of the room. But what we can do is dress babies appropriately. So it's really important for babies that they don't overheat, because they can't regulate their temperature in the same way that an adult can, and getting too hot is something that can increase the risk of SIDS. So I always think, if you're unsure, maybe take off a layer. If you want to kind of check how warm they feel, don't feel their extremities, so their hands and their feet, because they always feel a little bit colder than they are. So you can feel their torso, and that's quite a good indicator of how warm they are. But it's just using common sense. So, you know, if you feel too hot to have your duvet on, it's probably too hot for them to have their sleeping bag on if it's kind of a heat wave or something. And if you feel a bit chilly and you think it's on the chilly side, then use a warmer TOG. There are some guides out there. If you Google it, there are guides from the sleeping bag company. So you can always have a look at that as well as a guideline.
Yeah, no, that's very, very important. And would you say getting them used to, so I don't know if this also helps with a baby's sleep, but being outside in the daylight as well, so getting outside of your house, does that make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. So daylight, natural light, is so important for all of us, so adults, children, babies. It helps set our circadian rhythm, our internal body clock, and definitely with smaller babies as well, before they're producing their own melatonin, which is they don't do that in the first few months, getting them outside in the natural light is paramount, really. So, and also, I mean, there's loads of other things connected to it, like mental health for parents.
Yes, yes,
obviously. I think it's so important. And I always say to parents, if you can, try and get out twice a day. So once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And even if the most you can manage is a 5-minute walk around the block, that's better than nothing. But if you can spend a bit more time outside, it will really benefit you and your baby.
Yeah, no, I'm taking your advice, because when we spoke on the phone the other week, it's really helped me getting Zachary out mid-morning and mid-afternoon when he's awake. So it's quite nice, because he just lies in the pram and his favourite thing to do is looking up at the trees. Now yes, he can see, obviously, it depends on the age of the baby to anyone listening, but he loves it. And I really think that that tires him out, and it's made a difference in his daytime naps, because he does just fall asleep, I think, so much easier than he did before he even had all that stimulation. And when it comes to choosing where your baby sleeps then, would you always recommend being in the house, in the cot, or is it okay to have them out and about with you?
I always say, do you know what? It has to work for you and your life. But if you're working on sleep and you want to kind of work on improving it, then I do think having sleeps in their cot at home can help support nighttime sleep, simply because they become more used to that sleep environment. So they're more used to sleeping there, the same way that you or I probably sleep better in our bed at home. Maybe the first night when you go on holiday, or if you stay somewhere strange, sometimes, well, not for everyone, but a lot of people might not sleep quite as soundly because it's unfamiliar. So familiarising them with the cot during the day can really help support nighttime. However, if you are someone who's really struggling, it's better for baby to nap in the pram or the sling than not nap at all.
Yeah, I think I started off, so before I got in touch with you, and it was actually working really well, I think around week 8, I had a kind of schedule that was working for us, but I knew it wasn't, obviously it changes all the time. I'm definitely no expert, but he always fell asleep in the sling in the morning. We would go out for a walk and he would just conk out, and it was actually really special. I really liked that time together, because I was getting fresh air, I got to be really close to him. And I think sometimes there's almost too much of a pressure very early on to not have them with you, but you've got to enjoy it as well, I think, because they're only that little once, aren't they?
yeah, of course. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with contact naps. So some people do that for a long time. And certainly when they're in the fourth trimester, so those first few months of a baby's life, it's really common that they want to be close to you. And it's nature's way of surviving, really, because back in prehistoric times, you know, life was really dangerous, so our babies needed to be on us and close to us. It's actually kind of a modern phenomenon to have them away from us, so it's a normal thing for them to want to do, basically. And so mum as well
yeah, no, definitely. But there's also other people that say, oh, they shouldn't sleep in your bed with you, co-sleeping. What are your thoughts around co-sleeping?
So if we look at safe sleep guidelines, we know that their own sleep space in a cot, crib, Moses basket is the safest way for them to sleep. However, if you feel like you want to co-sleep, or you don't have another choice because, I don't know, baby won't settle in their own sleep space, you can co-sleep safely. So you just need to recreate safe sleeping conditions, which means a firm, flat mattress. And you'd need to make sure that there wasn't any of your bedding around baby. And one of the most dangerous things, actually, is babies overheating. So the instances of SIDS tend to be when babies have got caught up or smothered by bed, like caught up in or smothered by bedding. Mm. So pillows, duvets. If you think about it, a duvet for an adult, it's so different to what you'd have for a baby. So keeping them away from bedding, you can't have any other kids in the bed, no pets. You can't do it if you've been drinking alcohol or smoking or taking drugs or medications that might make you drowsy. Also, if you're severely sleep deprived, it's not a great idea, because you might not be quite in tune with your baby. So there's lots of things to think about.
Gosh. Yeah, no, it kind of sent a shiver through me when I think about it. And for the listeners that don't know, SID stands for sudden infant death syndrome.
Yes.
Which is a terrible thing, actually. I much prefer calling it SIDS, actually, than even when you say it out loud, because that's every parent's worst nightmare. Yeah. But it's really important to be aware of these things that Rosie's just delved into.
Yes.
If we could maybe go through safety checks to do on your baby before they go to sleep, is there anything that we should all be doing?
Well, I just think just obviously being in tune with your baby and just making sure they're okay. We should always put them down on their backs to sleep as well. Making sure they're appropriately dressed, that kind of thing. If they've got reflux or anything like that, holding them upright after feeds. But as long as you're comfortable, your baby's happy and healthy, that's fine.
Yeah, I've got to admit, the first few weeks, I had not a great experience with the birth, which I talk about on the podcast Food for Thought with my birth story.
Yes.
And if anyone wants to go back and listen to that rather than me go into it again here. But I would just stare at Zachary. I mean, I don't think I could possibly sleep, Rosie. I was just led in the bed. And even now still, when he's near me, I have to actually physically make myself sleep on the other side of the bed away from him, because I'm watching him all the time.
Yeah.
But it's like an instinctive thing. It's really hard to switch off from it. But now we've got more of a routine, which actually we should delve into, because you've helped Zachary and I so much. I mean, he's still so young, but he's already managed to do a few stints going through till 5 a.m. or 6:30.
Amazing.
Which has been incredible, Rosie, because as you know, we were getting, you know, like clockwork, a 3 a.m. wake up and then a 5 a.m. and he's slowly getting there. Now, to anyone listening that is probably thinking, oh, babies, you know, I know it changes. I'm very aware that babies do their own thing. But what do you think, Rosie, about routines? Is it too early? When should someone do it?
I think it really depends on the person and the baby and whether you're a kind of routine person or not. And whether you have the flexibility in your life that you can be doing a routine or not be doing a routine. So for some working parents like yourself, actually having a routine really benefits you as well, because otherwise how do you organize your life? So it depends what you're like. And some people hate routine and they just think, right, we're just going to follow baby's lead, do whatever baby wants to do. But sometimes baby does actually want a routine. It's hard to work that out. So I think starting with a gentle rhythm, I like to call it, from the very beginning is fine. So once milk supply is established, so if you're breastfeeding around 6 weeks, you can start a gentle rhythm to your day. Now, some babies naturally fall into this anyway, and you don't actually have to do anything. But others, maybe you could start thinking about starting the day at roughly the same time every day. And that's beneficial for everyone in the family, for all of us, for our own circadian rhythms, as well as babies. So starting the day at a regular time. So babies are naturally quite early risers. So I tend to say somewhere around 6:30 to 7 is a great time to start your day. So it might just be that you do that initially and you aim to get them into bed around 7 p.m. as well. And then all of your naps and all of your feeds are just going to slot in wherever they do throughout the day, just following baby's lead. And then you might find, actually, I'm noticing a pattern. Baby wants to go to sleep an hour and a half after they've woken up, for example, depending on their age or the baby in question. And then you'll start seeing a pattern anyway. But if you have no routine at all, then it might feel like quite a change to you.
Yes. And I know that having it was obviously an option anecdotally for me. It's helped so much because Zachary sleeps for 2 hours in the afternoon. Every morning he goes at 9 for an hour, 2 hours in the afternoon. I love it. And then half an hour around this time now we're recording this podcast.
Amazing.
And it's enabled me to have a little bit of reality, I guess. Just a chance to load the dishwasher or that's so silly, but to load the dishwasher, let alone record my podcast and run the business. But I think it's really helping him, because I do feed on demand constantly because I'm breastfeeding, but I do have a feeling of, I can see his tired cues now. Like we discussed, you know, I can see when he's rubbing his eyes or he's yawning. Mm-hmm. And if I miss that window, it's tough. But if I get that window, he goes down 10 times better.
Yes.
Rather than waiting for bang on 12 o'clock, perhaps it's 11:55.
Yeah, exactly.
But it always seems to help. Have you ever had an experience with a parent who's been working with you and their baby has just been a kind of, I don't know, a miracle baby, and just instantly they just get it?
Yeah, I have had that. So with some people, it might just be that there is just a tiny tweak and there was one thing kind of holding them back from baby sleeping, and it can literally happen in one night. It's more common that it takes longer to address sleep issues or improve sleep. It's quite common that it might take a week, 2 weeks, even a month or even longer, depending what's going on. But yeah, absolutely. I have seen that where it's just been as simple as blacking out their room, or as simple as baby waking in the night but not upset, and parents have gone in to pick them up and intervene when actually baby was quite happy and would have settled themselves back to sleep in the first place.
That's interesting, because we got to that stage where he didn't need food anymore in the night. And I think we just have to let, it's really difficult to do as a parent when you know they're awake, just to kind of wait and watch. It's a very strange, in the middle of the night, you're so tired, you're just like a zombie. Yes. You're staring at them and they're kind of writhing around and throwing themselves around in the cot, but they're actually totally okay. It's
Exactly. I had someone asked on my Instagram the other day, my baby's very noisy and wakes up and is chatting really loudly. What do I do? I said, unfortunately, you just need to leave them alone. If they're chatting quite happily, some babies will even almost sing themselves to sleep. And it's their way of unwinding, and that's okay. You need to let them do that and be happy and comfortable in their sleep space if they're not asking for you.
Zachary throws his legs in the air and slams them down on the cot.
The upper leg slam.
I'm like, is that happening to me as loud as I can in my sleep to wake mum up? But for any parents that are despairing, I completely feel you. If anyone's listening to this podcast thinking, I need help, it is tough. Sleep deprivation is... It's the hardest thing, I think, about being a new mum. I'm still very much in the middle of it. But for people listening, Rosie, can you give an average kind of time frame that they can look for to start maybe sleep training if they want to, or how late should they leave it kind of thing?
Sure. Well, it depends what you mean by sleep training. And I think the term itself has kind of got a bad name in the last few years, but there's nothing wrong with implementing a routine and teaching your baby to fall asleep independently. I tend to do it, if you're kind of doing more formal sleep training, it would be from 6 months onwards. And actually that, I tend to find it's really successful around that time, because that's when solids are introduced. Baby naturally has more of a routine anyway. When they're a bit younger, things are more unpredictable, more sporadic, there's more feeds needed, this kind of thing. So I think if you really want to do it and you're desperate, you're thinking, I really want to do sleep training, I'd do it from 6 months. But introducing gentle sleep changes can happen, like I said, from 6 weeks, really. And that purely is practicing. So I always talk about practicing putting them down to sleep. It doesn't have to be perfect. They might not get it every time. If they start crying and they get distressed, you pick them up and do something different. But it's a case of seeing if they can do it and giving them an opportunity to try and get themselves to sleep.
Because one thing that fascinates me, and I want to delve into the science a little bit, because when you explained it to me, it just made perfect sense about a baby's sleep cycle being a lot shorter. Is it 40 minutes or
it tends to be around 45 minutes.
And how does that work for anyone listening? They're saying, what do you mean a baby's sleep cycle?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what big wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we all go through sleep cycles, and actually from the age of around 4 months, baby sleep changes and it becomes more like an adult. So their sleep cycles are more similar to ours. But all of us go through sleep cycles between light and deep sleep. And there's loads of really important stuff going on behind the scenes in our brains. But one of the things that our body's doing is safety checks. So checking, has anything changed in my environment? Is it safe to go back to sleep? And this sounds kind of a strange concept, but if you think about it, again, going back to being cave people, our lives were really, really dangerous. There were predators and lots of other things around. And when we are in a deep sleep, we're incredibly vulnerable because we're hard to wake up. So we wouldn't necessarily hear that tiger coming around the corner. So our bodies do safety checks and check, has my environment changed? Does my environment seem okay? If so, I'll go back into a deep sleep. And it happens around 6 times a night. It does vary a little bit. But if you watched someone on a camera, a baby or an adult, going through their sleep cycles at night, we all do something in between sleep cycles. So we might twitch, we might turn over, we might wake up, we might go to the loo, a baby might have a chat to themselves, or some of us literally might just flinch. It really, really varies. But there's a lot going on behind the scenes to kind of keep us safe, really.
Yeah, definitely. It just made perfect sense. And it also made me appreciate that you can't force a baby into something because they just don't have those longer cycles.
Yeah, of course. And also, let's not forget, smaller babies have tiny tummies and they need regular, consistent feeding. And they might also be waking up just for comfort or to tell you something else, that they've got a dirty nappy or they feel cold or whatever else. They're not always waking for hunger, although it's obviously very common.
Yes, no, which I realised recently. We have some questions from our audience they want to ask. And the first one actually is really relevant, I'm sure, to so many people. Nikki has said, when my baby's overtired, he just screams. What do I do?
So there's two things to think about. Now, first of all, I do think a lot of people really obsess about overtiredness. And there's a lot of information about it online. But I think sometimes we can assume our babies are overtired when maybe they might not be. They might actually be crying for another reason. It might be that they're fed up or they've got a tummy pain or something else. The body is designed to go to sleep. We're really adept at going to sleep. And if you try and get them down when they're genuinely tired, they will go to sleep. But there is the element, the other thing to talk about with overtiredness, if they are genuinely chronically overtired, then cortisol, our stress hormone, does raise in the body slightly. And that acts a bit like they've had a shot of espresso. So they'll find it really hard to settle. So it's about trying to, as you were talking about earlier with Zachary, like trying to anticipate their window of tiredness. That's where routine can really help, because you can try and anticipate it before you get to that point. But trying to get them down before they reach the point of hysteria, before they get really, really overtired, but also not putting them down before they're tired. So putting them down under tired, I actually believe is worse. Mm. Because if you try and settle a baby who's not ready to go to bed, Of course, they're going to cry and protest. Yeah. The same as you or I. If I tried to go to bed a couple of hours before I was ready, I'd toss and turn and be like, oh, huffing and puffing. So it's really hard to get a balance. But I tend to worry more about them being undertired than overtired, because they will still go to sleep if they're overtired.
That makes sense. Otherwise, they're just there smiling at you in their cot with that big smile, like, play with me, mum. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
We've definitely been there. Annie has said, my 3-month baby can go without feeding during the night, but isn't putting on as much weight as she should do. So what's more important, the sleep or the weight?
It's a balance of both. So I would speak to a feeding professional. So if you're breastfeeding an IBCLC, or perhaps you might want to speak to your health visitor or even your GP, if it's a real weight concern, then it might be that a professional puts you on a feeding plan, and perhaps upping the feeds during the day can be helpful. And some babies will do like a lot of feeding. I know Zachary sometimes does this, a lot of feeding before bed. They're kind of tanking up, and some babies will naturally do that. If weight is a genuine concern, it might be that you are, it is suggested that you introduce a night feed. But it's unusual that they would be telling you you'd need to feed through the night. And it also depends on the baby and the extreme of the weight loss, if that makes sense.
No, it really does. That was really helpful for Annie. And Laura has said, my baby prefers breastfeeding before bed and doesn't enjoy the bottle during the day when I leave her with others. Should I change to bottle before bedtime?
It's really a personal choice. If you want to continue to be able to combi feed, or whether you're feeding express milk, you do need to give one bottle a day. Otherwise, baby will start to reject it. But where you give that bottle is entirely up to you. There's no benefit particularly to giving bottle or breast at bedtime, in terms of them kind of accepting it and stuff. But if you want to breastfeed and that's baby's preference, that's absolutely fine. There are hormones in breast milk that help baby sleep as well. And it's a natural process where we relax and, you know, enjoy having a cuddle, and all those hormones are flying around, all the love hormones. But it's really personal choice. There's no rule to it, basically.
No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Right, we have our fact or fiction round.
Ooh,
Rosie.
Okay.
Okay, if you could answer fact or fiction to the following questions, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. Always use a dummy to stop a crying baby.
Fiction.
You can sleep train from birth.
Fiction.
A playful bath time before bedtime doesn't help them go to sleep.
I'm getting confused about that.
I know, I had to think about it when I read it.
It doesn't help them. It can help them, but it can hinder them. So, it's kind of in between.
I love that, the nuance.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's good. You should never wake a sleeping baby.
Fiction.
Oh, can you just explain why? I'm sorry, I'm breaking the round, because everyone knows that.
There's loads of reasons why you might wake a sleeping baby. Number one, if there's a feeding issue and they're going to miss a feed. If they're jaundiced or have an unhealth condition, you definitely need to wake them. I also wake them to protect the next nap. So that's another reason. If you know that they're not going to take their next nap later on and end up over time for bedtime. Also, if they're doing loads of sleeping during the day and not a lot at night, then it's worth waking them, definitely.
There we go. Breastfed babies sleep better than formula fed babies.
Fiction.
Again, just I hear this all the time. I'm terrible at this fact or fiction round. I always hear that formula fed babies sleep better in the night, and I was so jealous. Is that true?
It's not true at all. So I would say 50% of my clients have breastfed babies and 50% formula fed. Both of them have the same challenges. And actually, sleeping issues I find are rarely linked to the feeding method, unless there's a problem with the actual feeding, which would be probably be noticed earlier on. But with older babies, certainly there's absolutely no difference in how well they sleep.
Brilliant. The earlier you wean a baby, the better their sleep.
Fiction, definitely.
Here we go. You should sleep when your baby sleeps.
Fiction.
Babies only awaken if they're hungry.
Fiction.
Daytime naps are essential for a good night's sleep.
Fact.
Babies should always sleep in the dark.
Fact.
Oh, actually,
no.
Oh, no,
that's
no.
Actually fiction, because there are some times when they might not if you were doing a sling nap or a pram nap.
Okay, cool.
Or a contact nap.
There we go. There we go. That was a good fact or fiction round, Rosie.
Amazing. Amazing.
Okay, great. So that does wrap up the episode today, which I hope has been so helpful for everybody. And we finished with a food for thought. So mine today would be that having, and currently going through this myself at the moment, I've really realized that there is no kind of right or wrong. And comparison for me has been one of the worst things. You hear your friend's baby sleeping through the night. I don't know, that you feel that they're doing something, so you should do it too. But what is important that I've learned from Rosie is that the nap schedule during the day has really helped me and my baby. And of course, that's a complete unique preference. But if anybody out there has the chance to work on a nap schedule, then, you know, maybe that's great. But for others, do let your baby be your guide. I think that's the ultimate message I've got at the end, is that you have to do what works for you.
Yeah.
Rosie, if you could leave our listeners with a helpful food for thought today, what would that be?
Sure. So I would say there really is no such thing as a perfect parent or a perfect baby. We're all human, so things change. There are times we struggle, there are times we flourish. And just to be kind to yourself, really, on your parenting journey.
Oh, I love that. It's hard because I think the kindness aspect, one of the hardest things to do, just like learning to nap in the day, is learning to be kind to yourself.
Yes.
And mum guilt is huge, and especially with sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I was mentally unwell from sleep deprivation after giving birth. It's big, you know. I think every single parent is a superhero.
I totally agree. And also, the other thing to note is just, you know, if someone really is struggling, then do reach out for support, whether that's an expert or friends or family or somebody to talk to if you're really struggling.
Yes. And Rosie, if people want to find out more about you, where can they go? Where can they get help?
So first point of call, my Instagram page is at @just_chill_mama. So I do lots of Q&As, and I'm always putting up content on there. Also, our website is www.justchillbabysleep.co.uk. So we have online courses and we do one-to-ones as well. I've got an amazing team who work with me. So if you want someone to hold your hand and talk you through it, then we've got one-to-ones. And if you're happy to go away and apply principles yourself, then the online course is amazing.
Perfect. Well, Rosie, thank you so, so much for helping us all today on Food for Thought.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to what is the last episode of Food for Thought on Motherhood. I really hope that this has been an incredibly informative mini-series that will give you the confidence to enjoy motherhood by following evidence-based advice. I would like to share such a huge thank you to everybody who's listened, the wonderful guests that I've had on, and if you enjoyed this, please do leave a review so that we can reach those high highs in the charts, and hopefully the ultimate aim is to help more and more people. For more information about me, my Retrition Clinic, the books, the blogs, healthy recipes, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.